not least of which is technically challenged. My name is Sean Mill.
Are we recording?
Yes. Okay. So, my name is Sean Mill. I'm a member of this committee, I guess. But today I've been asked to fill in as past chair, since our chair and vice chair are unable to be here this afternoon. So, welcome everyone. Thank you for joining this Economic Development District or EDD meeting. Today's date for the benefit of the audio recording is Monday, August 22nd, 2019, and the time is roughly 1:36. So we'll begin this meeting right away with the agenda that you have before you, or hopefully you do. If you don't, please let us know, we'll get one to you. The first is introduction, so we'll start from Katie. Why don't we start from your end, and we'll work our way across the room. And when we get done with everybody here at the table, we'll start with Christy and go through everybody in the audience. Paul, do you mind if we pause right there? I just realized that poor form here. You gotta push the button on the microphone for us to hear you if it turns green. Sure. Oh, let's start over. It was recommended. Okay. It was me.
Katie Gerard with Wasatch Front Staff.
Linda Kelly, Layton Hills Mall.
Thomas Wadsworth, go ahead.
Chris Love, Group on Real Estate in 12 County.
Paul Hackey, Twilla Technical College.
Rick Bullion, Salt Lake Community College.
Harry Fullerton, Maine, Utah.
Ed Bailey, Morgan City.
Mike Newton, Morgan County.
Mark Miller, Utah Department of Workforce Services.
Ted Knowlton, WFRC.
Scott Hess, WFRC and WFPG.
Sean Mill, Twilla County Commission.
Andrew Gruber, Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Taylor Woodbury, Woodbury Corporation.
Muriel Sochnell, Deseret UAS.
No, you gotta push it again.
It'll be red or green. If it's green, it's working. Push it over
there. There we go. Okay, Sylvie Castro, Salt Lake County.
Chris Williams, Davis School District.
Stephanie McCarthy, EDA Architects, representing Salt Lake County.
Jeff Edwards with Utah Advanced Materials and Manufacturing Initiative.
Amanda Tullis with Davis Technical College.
Bob Denboy, University.
Christy Chambers, Columbus Community Center.
Chris Gilmer, Wasatch Front Staff.
Len Reichert, U.S. Ignite.
I'm with Wasatch Front Regional Council.
And thank you very much for always having our paperwork ready. Mary, you're absolutely awesome, and so are all the staff. Oh, yes. So Susan just introduced Guy. Just walk in. All right. Well, it's a good thing that we're all excellent at economic development, because our microphone etiquette is just something different. Our next item is consent agenda. From our last meeting in May. If the chair would entertain any revisions or discussion on those or a motion for approval. But not all at once. Well, I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve those unless anyone's got any other revisions.
No. Second.
Okay, great. We have a motion and a second to approve the meeting minutes from May. Are there any further discussion? Nothing? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Excellent. Moving right along. Well, you can see that the chair's report would be next, but I'm not the chair. I'm just the substitute, and I'm not prepared to make a report. Well, I could talk about Twill all day long, but I don't think anybody here wants to hear about that. Staff, was there anything that you know that Abby was going to bring up? Okay, great. Then we'll move right along to the next item is public comments. So This is a public meeting. If there's anyone in the public that wishes to come forward, please use the rostrum at the front of the room, state your name, and ask that you keep your comments to about 2 or 3 minutes. Is there anyone? All right, seeing none.
Commissioner, I would just note, even though this is not a public comment, I know there are some folks that are joining us here at WFRC for the first time. Welcome, if it's your first time here. If it is your first time here, please make yourself comfortable, grab a drink here in the fridge. In the room immediately behind us, there's coffee, if that's your flavor. And the restrooms are right behind the reception desk here. And then at the end of the meeting, if you drove here, you can get a parking validation. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you very much for those housekeeping items. All right. I understand that item number 4 A and B are somewhat combined, and we will have a bit of a tag team opportunity here with Ted and Scott. So without further ado, we have the Wasatch Ranger County Development District. Item number 4, the SEDS Progress Report Implementation Steps, as well as Wasatch Choice 2050 Vision Map. Scott, take it away.
Hey, thank you so much. Thank you for stepping in on short notice. I really appreciate it. Having let us know she wasn't able to come, and appreciate having here. We also have a number of new members. I realize that this committee meets quarterly, so there has been some time that's passed between our last meeting and new meeting. A handful of you I've spoken to on the phone. I really appreciate everybody's engagement and involvement here at the Wasatch Economic Development District. We're typically on acronym watch by Mr. Gruber, so if I go too far down the line of acronyms, stop me, and we'll try to back it up and make sure that everything is known by everyone. And also just hopefully this provides some overview of the committee itself, what our role is, responsibility, and then what we're going to begin doing for implementation moving forward. So Katie, if you'll start here. Quick overview of what we're going to talk about today with these two groups, or these two presentations. The SEDS, the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, it's a 5-year strategy, covers 2018 to 2023, and it was adopted in June of 2019. So we have now, right here, a new 5-year strategy that we're moving forward with. We're currently reviewing and updating all of our website information. So committee members have received a final PDF of this. It's the links to the website are still the old SEDS, but once the new website information is all live, we're trying to scrub all of the last 4 years of information, make sure it's consistent. We will send out the new links to you, and you'll have an electronic copy of the SEDS available there. We did receive some EDA economic development administration feedback we'll talk about. We're going to look at the 4 key strategies that are in this SEDS, talk with Ted about the Wasatch Choice 2050 connection, our long-range vision for transportation, land use, and economic development decisions, and then go back to those strategies and talk about implementation steps within each of them, and then discuss a little bit about EDA project development and one of the core reasons that this group exists, which is to help be the conduit to receive federal Economic Development Administration funds from federal EDA down into local communities that cover our 5 counties, Weaver, Morgan, Davis, Tooele, and Salt Lake. Any questions so far? All right, so in June 2019, we submitted our final SEDS. It went forward to EDA. It was actually reviewed and approved in just about 2.5 weeks. We had been discussing with our federal partners in Denver our SEDS and the direction that it was going, so I think that was really helpful for us to get that staff review back so quickly. But just want to read this. This was in the note from EDA on the approval. So we have reviewed and accepted your SEDS document, encourage you to continue to use it as a tool for the Wasatch Front. It was a comprehensive analysis that addresses many of the issues that will face Utah in the coming years as the state continues to grow in population. We also appreciate that you were able to weave the SEDS into the Wasatch Choice 2050 process. So what we did, and part of the reason that the plan goes from 2018 to 2023, but it had a 2019 adoption, is that we pulled back and asked federal EDA for a little bit more time so that we could align the adoption of the SEDS with the adoption of our long-range regional transportation plan and our regional vision, which had 4 years of work done on it up to June 2019. And this provides an opportunity for us to link funding decisions for transportation, local land use decisions out to 2050, and economic development assistance projects all together in one group. And EDA was excited about that opportunity. They said that they actually wanted more economic development districts to consider how the EDD work and the SEDS work relates to regional transportation plans and other land use planning. So we got really good marks for doing so, and I think it was a really beneficial process. So if you haven't seen the SEDS, we have a couple of copies printed out there, but we will share that again with you. And it relies on four key strategies. So the past SEDS had six goals. We've changed that, four key strategies. The first is to link development with transportation and other infrastructure, create fiscally sustainable places, provide amenities, and attract and retain businesses and encourage innovation. And then within the document, there is a plan of action. We're going to be talking about this today. But the plan of action goes through specific objectives and then action items that we're going to work on together. We looked at this list collaboratively among all of our organizations. So we looked at it with local governments, private sector folks, Department of Workforce Services, GOED, EDCU, and tried to capture the value in what we're all collectively doing so that we can put collaborative actions together that meet what you're all doing and also add value to the region in economic development specifically. Because our bread and butter isn't as a metropolitan planning organization, as a typically transportation-focused agency, is to really link transportation and the right land uses together that create economic opportunities. So our EDD is not looking necessarily at workforce development. We're not specifically a housing organization. We're not a local land use planning organization that's trying to bring businesses in and locate them. But what we are doing is we're a collection made up of all of those organizations doing that work, and we want to collectively move forward this five-year strategy. So we'll discuss today a few implementation steps that we see that are collaborative actions we're working on, or maybe some of our partners are working on. But as we discuss that, I really want you to think about your role on the committee and the work that you're doing and the actions that relate to you as a local government or private organization, and that we're going to begin reaching out and tapping members and community members for future presentations to come back and talk about implementation steps of the five-year SEDS based on work that is already happening in the region. So with that overview, that's kind of the large framework, and hopefully that gives you an idea of what we're trying to do here as a committee and moving forward. We're going to bring Ted here with his favorite partner, the Rollaway Map. He brings us everywhere. And we're going to talk about the Wasatch Choice 2015 long-range vision.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate that. Good afternoon. I'm Ted Knowlton. I'm the Deputy Director at Wasatch Front Regional Council, and I'm going to give you an overview of something that we do here in the overall region that we're really proud of, called Wasatch Choice 2050, and it's a rare thing. Wasatch Front Regional Council, a lot of you already know this, but we serve an area that extends from Brigham City all the way down through Bluffdale, including Morgan and Tooele counties. And our primary purpose for existence is that we develop a transportation plan. So if you think about it, a light rail line, bus rapid transit, a major roadway or trail, it's born on our map. We represent you, the local governments, many of you are here, and we are guided by a board of mayors and county elected officials. Now, in that process, typically what a group like ours will do is they will say, well, where's growth going to happen, and we'll respond to that. What we do that's different is we dovetail a conversation with how should local plans unfold, talk to local governments as we do transportation planning and economic development planning, those three planks that Scott has talked about. And I'm taking a step back because I think that some of you are new to the organization. But we've talked about Wasatch Choice 2050 at this group over the last few years. What we're doing today on the milestone, as a milestone for Wasatch Choice, is we're introducing two things, and that's what I'm going to just spend a few minutes on each. One is that we have a poster, and the poster is not just, that's cool, they have a poster, but it's that we've boiled down and encapsulated the final products and communications of Wasatch Choice That's part one. And then part two, what are the steps that we're going through now to help aid the region in implementing, okay? So, now, Wasatch Choice 2050, this poster, it reads, and this is sort of like the number one top line message about Wasatch Choice, which is that even as Utah continues to grow, Utah is growing, we have a plan. We collectively got together and said, how can we plan these things in a way that maintains future quality of life? Our future quality of life depends on the choices that we make today. The Wasatch Choice 2050 is our community's shared vision for transportation investments, development patterns, and economic opportunities. This vision map and key strategies show how advancing the vision can enhance quality of life even as we grow. Now, you'll be able to peruse this vision map in more detail. I'm not going to go through the detail on this, but here's what you're looking at. This is as if you got in a time machine and you landed in the year 2050 and you looked at the major organizing pieces for how the greater metropolitan area, including down into Utah County and Summit County and Wasatch County, how they're organized. And that includes a regional transportation system, roads, transit, and bicycling, major development centers, regional land uses we call them, centers, residential areas, open space, employment areas and industrial areas, and the like. This map, taking a step back, tells the story of four key strategies, and they are, let's seek to provide transportation choices. People can choose the best way for them to get around. Let's support housing options. Three, let's preserve open space. And four, let's link economic development with transportation and housing decisions. Economic development, transportation, and housing, those three pieces. And so you'll see this organization of major development centers with a transportation framework. And that where matters question, where do those things align, is perhaps the key behind this whole process. It's not just enough to provide housing and transportation. Let's see if we can align those in economic development in order to maximize regional benefits. That's part one, and now I'll go to part two. Where are we going from here? We're going to work on roll the poster away music for the next time that we do this. Scott, can you forward that?
You have it.
Oh.
He's all about empowering you to your
band. Yeah, thank you. So the implementation steps that are happening, here's something that I think will be of particular interest to the WFEDD. So we will be launching, does this have a pointer? Or will I initiate the self-destruct sequence by accident? Or what?
It doesn't work on
the TV. Ted, I have one right here.
I saw it work.
Okay, and I'm remembering that this is a television, and so it wouldn't work anyway. So this is the electronic version of what you just saw. That will be launched. What is neat is that the vision is tied to formal plans. The regional transportation plan, the comprehensive economic development strategy that Scott just mentioned, and to local general plan. Those three pieces. Yeah, okay, all right, okay. And this map, you'll be able to zoom into a particular spot, Mill Creek City, and you'll be able to pan from the vision to the transportation plan to a land use element, look at general plans, look at economic development information, and we'd like to get your feedback on how that unfolds over time, including things like key economic clusters. And so that people are drilling down from a framework into the questions of policy across those different dimensions. Okay, so that's one thing to note. A second thing is that we will be producing status reports for how we are doing as communities in doing the things that Scott talked about that are in the SEDS, and implementing the various components of Wasatch Choice 2050. I'm not going to go through this, but things like commercial market value within communities, housing mix, housing opportunities, and the like. On September 12th, this is your invitation. Please come join us at the Utah League of Cities and Towns. One of the days is dedicated towards Wasatch Choice 2050. This will run the whole day long and is organized around these four key strategies, but depth. Drilling down into best practices, local case studies, looking at the impacts of new legislation and new tools as well. And there's two out of state speakers. The first, Joe Minicazzi, is going to talk about what's in your city's wallet, how do we maximize public assets, and Dave Biggs focusing on state of the practice public engagement. And that is my two pieces. So again, cool Wasatch Choice vision that ties economic development into these other questions. It's tied to planning, including the comprehensive economic development strategy. We're moving forward to help support the region's implementation. So I hope that wasn't too long, and I'm going to go back to you, Mr. Chair.
Actually, thank you very much. This is a fairly comprehensive plan, and staff and their partners have been working on this for a very long time. I think it's fantastic that this also includes considerations that are important to every one of us around the table for economic development. Are there any questions, any comments or observations that you'd like staff to take note of and work into? Pretty quiet room today. Okie doke. All right. Ted, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
And on that note, so that the EDB sits as a group sort of outside but adjacent to our other core groups within Wasatch Front Regional Councils. We have a long-range planning group, regional growth committee. We have a short-range funding group that helps us make the funding decisions on our 5 to 6 year program of about $40 million annually called Transportation Committee. And those roll up into the actual Wasatch Front Regional Council. And then on the side, we have Wasatch Front Economic Development District. So the other groups have heard this presentation. August is a big month for our organization. There's every one of our group committees meet. And we've made the proposal that if anybody wants a copy of that map and you have 3 feet by 6 feet of wall space to fill in your office or home or, you know, wherever you want to put it.
Yeah, hang it in your bedroom, yeah. You know, whatever works for you.
It's great. we're going to use all the pre-printed copies as rubber wrap all year long. So if you would like one of those, please let me know and we can make sure that we print one out and get it to you. We try to make it a size that you can get a commercially available frame without spending, you know, hundreds of dollars to do that. So you will start to see that filter out. And actually, this top right map here is the Wasatch Choice 2040 map. And we still go out to partner communities and see the 10-year-old vision that we're going to, you know, I'm sure over the next few weeks and months, see swapped out for now 2050 additional vision.
This may be redundant, you may have already answered it. Is this available to us to share from a social media standpoint?
It will be. Yeah, actually, Katie's going to be sharing some info. And then after that conference that Ted mentioned, the Utah League of Cities and Towns on September 12th, this is going to be much more broadly available, including the more detailed website. Because I imagine if you're an individual city, if you're Roy City or you're a developer for a particular project, seeing the region in the aggregate is important for us to think regionally, but you got to be able to zoom in and look specifically at particular neighborhoods, particular communities, and then look at the interplay of planned transportation and housing, etc. So we want to be able to provide really good info for folks to be able to dig into the details of their community, and that's coming soon. Thank you.
And also, for the first time on our interactive map, just to make a plug for starting to use that when the link goes out, when you zoom in on one of those land uses, one of those centers, for the first time, we ask the local communities, one, are you willing to have a public conversation about this? So every land use on that map is a real land use that elected officials and city staff said, yes, we're willing to discuss this with our residents. But beyond that, we ask them their general time frame. So is this something that currently has buildings going up in it, like you see in South Salt Lake or Sandy City's downtown center as it's developing out? Or is it a longer term vision where maybe it's in the general plan, but we haven't had interest or the underlying zoning land uses haven't changed? So if you're interested in your city or neighborhood or centers that are generally around your area of interest, you can zoom in, click on them, and in the details, we'll give you a general time frame of when they expect a public conversation to begin happening around those. It's a really powerful tool.
Jeff? This is a question for Ted, maybe for Mark Noll. When you guys were doing this process, how much did you consider where employment centers are versus people? I know this is one of your favorite subjects for the last 25 years, but the idea of employment location, the transportation corridors that connect them with residences, how did that factor into this whole discussion?
And tell me, Jeff, if this is where you're headed, but the workforce accessibility questions, how well can residents get to job sites? How easy is that interaction was a key consideration that we elevated to have a formal weight into every step of our process throughout the entire thing.
And I raise that because it's an underpinning of economic development, and I'm looking at Tom from GoEd and EDCU. And I guess what I'm hoping is that there's a good bridge between what you guys are doing on that side and what economic developers are doing on the other side of that, meaning that let's recruit companies and put them in places where they can get the workers that they need. And this is not a new subject, I know, but I guess I'm just trying to be sure that that's part of what you're thinking about there, and that it's coordinated with the other folks on the other side of the table.
Yeah, and thank you for the question. It's one of the, I did the really high level, and there's more that we did that we really think kind of moved the ball forward. And to help really build in the economic development consideration, one of the things that we did was really do a careful job of looking at that workforce access question. And we'd love to talk with you as an EDD about, well, where do we go with that in the future? But let me just briefly, sorry if I'm going too long, but let me just briefly note that you know, transportation entities have long been about providing mobility, speed of movement. And there is a big growing trend, not just at Wasatch Front Regional Council, to couple that with also making sure that we have great workforce accessibility, which is not just about speed, it's also about proximity and land use centering and the like. And so has a foothold in Senate Bill 34 about affordable housing. It has a foothold in Senate Bill 136, which is the Transportation Governance Amendment. It has a foothold in the Utah's Unified Transportation Plan. It's one of the metrics for that effort. And so that way of weaving economic development with transportation and land use is becoming a big movement in Utah to really help us get on the same page and think about how we can help our economy thrive.
Hey, Ted, just the flip side of that, sort of to Jeff's point also, is as an agency, we typically work on the transportation and land use side. And then the other side of that is what's happening specifically from the economic development perspective. And so I think, Thomas, you might talk some about what's happening in updating the state's economic development strategy. I think, Scott, we're gonna get there, right? How are locational considerations taken into account, for example, when the state is doing tax incentives for job creation? Is a job wherever it is, or does it make some sense to consider the locational efficiency? Where are you creating a job? Is it in proximity to workers and their ability for housing? Is it a job created in proximity to existing transportation systems? So, or is it located in an area where you have to build all new infrastructure? So these types of questions on the economic development side, I think, have to be married with the decisions on the infrastructure side.
And I want to chime in on some of that too. Andrew and I had the opportunity this weekend to have a broader discussion on a radio program about this sort of thing. This is something we spent a good amount of time talking about. Jeff, I know in your prior role, you well appreciate this, and Tom certainly with our statewide partners too, but oftentimes every community wants to be able to prove that they provided jobs. So this kind of banter here is for the benefit of some of our private sector members. So, you know, as a politician, that's certainly true. We, you know, voters always respond well to somebody saying that they're looking to get more jobs and better paying jobs. But as statewide citizens, sometimes we care, even if that's not coming to our specific community, because I'll use anecdotalism maybe to Tooele County's example. And I appreciate that it was at the very bottom of that map. Ted, thank you very much. It was at the very bottom in small print. I was just trying to lighten the mood. apparently that was too serious. We've got 3 out of 4 of our adult-aged working population, 75.6% of our workforce, commutes out of the county every day to go work somewhere else. And we have one vulnerable little 2-mile stretch where I-80 and 201 come together on the Salt Lake County side before it splits into continuing westbound I-80 and dropping into State Route 36 down towards Tooele City, 12 miles away. And anytime there's a really bad accident there, which we're having more and more because we're so quickly growing with residences, and the lane capacity isn't growing wider, right? Now, if you're not a Tooele City or Tooele County citizen, rather, you may think, well, anecdotally, this sounds really great. I get why you as a politician would care about local job creation. But we all, as statewide citizens, worry that every time there's a bad accident, it'll back up for 1.5 to 4 hours at a time. That's either rush hour. See, the folks that are from Tooele County or have experienced it are nodding their heads. If you're an employer in the Salt Lake Valley, you care now about our lack of transportation infrastructure, right? If you're an educator, you care because, like, it's one thing to be able to say with Tooele Technical College you're educating a workforce, but if they can't get a job because they're reliably not on time, you care as an employer. And that goes for a bank and any kind of loan, right? So that's where all of this is interwoven. And what I really appreciate about the uniqueness of this Wasatch Choice 2050 plan, I've been here long enough to know that not too long ago, and it's not the fault of anybody, it's just the natural progression of things and the maturity of the organization and how we're treating these two different silos that, at, you know, not too long ago were very different. They've now come together. And of course, we all recognize that transportation is a major part of not only workforce accessibility, but your goods, right? If you have problems with logistics and you've got a driver that was supposed to turn and burn from a manufacturing plant to drop off input goods or take a finished product to market, and they're also caught in that 4-hour traffic jam, that's a bit of a problem. And then that hurts folks like GOED and EDC Utah from being able to do their job, because recruitment all of a sudden to certain types of industry becomes a problem. So anyway, we can continue to build more lane miles, or we can reverse, as Andrew said, you know, this is something that I'm hopeful that state legislators start paying attention to. It's gotta be the right kind of incentives for different kinds of industry, right? Because if our workforce, and this is true where any of us live, excel in one particular thing that they seem to be driving 1 hour for, that they could be doing it closer to home. That's not only gonna help with our transportation, it's gonna help with our air quality and other recruitment things that are mattering more and more, not just on social media, but as part of the broader policy conversations. Again, I feel like, Jeff, you asked a really great question. It's a great setup for a couple agenda items later, so I'd like us to revisit that when we get to the roundtable discussion. Are there any other questions as it pertains to items A and B under 4? Oh, you're still in A or B? Okay, my bad. Sorry, go ahead.
All right. So that provided a little bit about the SEDS, something, you know, giving you a Wasatch Choice 2050 overview. And now I'm going to go through a handful of actual implementation steps that are written into the SEDS, because the end goal of this working group, and maybe it didn't feel like this the last year for those who have continued to be engaged, but the end goal was not to create a really good document, which we did. We have really good documents, really excellent SEDS, but that is really only as good as the information in it and the implementation steps built around it. And so let's chat through these 4 strategies here and some of the implementation steps that we're going to go through. And these are in plain language. So if you actually go to Chapter 5, Plan of Action, I was going to print one of these, but we're going to have it electronically. There's definitely more words. I'm a lover of spreadsheets, and so it's in a spreadsheet format. But I think what we'll do is just briefly hit on a few of these, and then have really an assignment for the committee for you to go back, review the SEDs, and look at the items that are in the objectives and the collaborative actions that you're doing, and figure out how we can work together so that in November we come back and we get a presentation that's not me speaking to you, but me and both the committee members talking about the wins that we have and the work that we're all doing together. So with that, Tom, we've actually talked quite a bit about policy, state policy, Senate Bill 172. Do you mind taking a couple of minutes and just tell us the work that's happening there?
Yeah, happy to. So SB 172 was passed this last legislative session. It charged GOED with developing a new economic development strategic plan. So those who've been in economic development for a while know that Governor Huntsman, when he was elected, created his economic development plan, and that has been what legislatively and in the governor's office we've been working on ever since. And in this last legislative session, there was the discussion around that was a great plan, we've been extremely successful, is it time for us to change our strategy and start looking at different things? As Andrew alluded to, what do incentives look like? Or do we make incentives larger? Do we make them smaller? Do we get rid of them? How does that interface with workforce and with housing and with transportation and things of that nature? And so this past summer, we've developed 15 to 20, I can't remember the exact number, of working groups that are all focused on different topics of economic development, and asked them to come forward with some recommendations on what they'd like to see in a new economic development strategic plan. And so all of those have been submitted to us, and then now in the next 6 weeks or so, GOED, with the help of a national consultant, we're going to be going through all of those recommendations and figuring out what makes sense and what doesn't make sense to add into the new strategic economic development plan. And then we'll be making a presentation to the legislature in October on what that looks like.
Great, thank you. And these are a little out of order, but just to talk about the transportation reinvestment zones, we have a collaborative action in the SEDS that asks us to forward information about transportation reinvestment zones. If you're not familiar with those, they're an investment, or they're a tax incentive, kind of like a community reinvestment area that local economic developers have been using for years, that ties incentives directly to transportation investments. So it brings these two together. And there's a few other unique things that legislation can do. But Wasatch Front Regional Council and the EDD were engaged in two of those working groups for Senate Bill 172, private-public partnerships, and then local community development. And one of the items that we had raised in this Where It Matters approach, and also to look at transportation reinvestment zones to make it as robust of a tool as possible for locals, is potentially including state sales tax in the funding structure for that. So it's currently silent on whether the state could invest in TRZs, but that would be a really large incentive for local economic developers, and also developments coming in if they knew that they could capture some increment of state sales tax when it does link the vital transportation choices, the right local land uses, housing accessibility, workforce accessibility. So in those key locations where a TRZ makes the most sense, really incentivize it as much as possible.
I just want to comment on this just briefly to make sure that everybody's clear on what we're talking about. So, you know, tax increment financing is a pretty standard mechanism in economic development where you define an area. Within that area, that you set a base for the tax collections that are coming in, and then you make investments, typically an infrastructure investment, and then the value in sales taxes collected or the property values in the area go up, right, from those investments that are made. And then you take the incremental increase in the taxes coming in, and rather than, and then you decide how to use that money in a way that may deviate from the ways it would normally be used. This new tool, Transportation Reinvestment Zones, looks at that approach, but specifically with regard to investments in transportation infrastructure. So you define an area, and then you make an investment in infrastructure, typically in public infrastructure, and then that is going to contribute to the value of the housing in that area. It's going to increase the sales taxes that are collected. And then you can take that incremental value and use it to reinvest in that infrastructure, pay off the bonds that may have been used to pay the capital costs, maintain that and operate that transportation going forward into the future. So it's a way to say, You know, if we build a tracks line, let's say, to the point of a mountain area, well, that's going to produce a lot of economic activity and value. Well, how do we pay for that? Well, let's capture some of the incremental value that's created by the investment of, in that tracks line and use it to pay off the costs of that infrastructure. Does that make sense? Okay, so here's I'm just talking about this because I think this is a great idea, okay? Right now, in a transportation reinvestment zone or a community reinvestment area, Susie knows this better than anybody, the incremental revenues that are captured, can be captured, are just the local revenues. So local property taxes or local sales taxes. It doesn't include state revenues. Well, if there's more economic activity from sales taxes that are going on in an area, the state sales taxes that are going to be collected in that area are going to go up. Right? The state sales tax is 4.85%. That's more than the local sales taxes. So the notion here is that we amend the law to allow for the capture of some or all of incremental state sales taxes also to reinvest in infrastructure. It wouldn't be a mandate that it would happen, but it would at least authorize it, because right now it's not even authorized in law. The state cannot participate with incremental revenue, state revenues that would come in tied to an infrastructure investment. So define an area, allow the state to participate along with locals. The reason we're bringing it up now is because it fits in with the SEDS. It's totally consistent with the Wasatch Choice vision for linking transportation and housing and economic development. And it's also one of the strategies that's been put forward through the SB 172 process. Okay.
Great, yeah, I mean, definitely sounds like a great idea for aligning the investments with the potential tax increment that can come from those. I guess a couple questions. So if the state does this, would it just be the percentage that's currently going to the Transportation Investment Fund? That would be the equivalent percentage of the future sales tax increment. And where does the TTIF come into this as well?
Yeah, so I see this as Meryl's taking us into some of the details because she knows this stuff and I appreciate it.
You want to define what TTIF is? Not everybody might.
Yeah, this would be a different tool from the existing, a different and supplemental tool to the existing transportation infrastructure tools that are in place right now. So the state is already putting significant dollars, principally from sales tax, state sales tax, into transportation infrastructure. That's a collection of taxes from all over the state. It goes into a pot of funding that is allocated by UDOT and the State Transportation Commission. This, what we're talking about here, would not impact that in any way. The difference would be that it would be specific to a particular location. Because right now, if the state is spending sales tax money on infrastructure investment, it's a decision of prioritizing a pot of resources that are collected from around the state. What this would do is it would recognize in a particular defined geography that infrastructure investment is going to increase value, and it would be a way to capture that incremental sales tax collection from that particular area and invest it back into that project that's done in that area. So it would be another and a separate tool from the things that are already in place, investing in state roads through the state TIF, Transportation Investment Fund, or the state TTIF, the Transit Transportation Investment Fund. It would be another and different tool.
Restricted funds are super sexy. Guy, yeah, you have another?
Yeah, question. When you say infrastructure, are you just talking transportation, or is it all other types of technology?
Now I'm going to look to Susie to fill in here if you want to. The basic idea is that it would be the investment would be made in transportation infrastructure. But Susie, there's perhaps a little degree of flexibility for associated water or other utilities or development costs, right?
Transportation needs to be the primary focus. But as we talked with Senator Harper and those who sponsored it, they wanted some flexibility for the entire project. But transportation is the focus.
Was there a question in the back?
Yeah. Who's running the bill?
The question was, who's running the piece of legislation?
There's no bill yet. No. So this is something that's being discussed right now.
You don't have somebody you're working with.
Well, we do.
So you're not
There are numerous legislators that are involved in this discussion. Nobody's committed to sponsoring anything, so I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here. Thank you. It's the right question. What do you think? Does that sound good? Does it sound like a good idea? Just looking for a little feedback here.
Again, not everybody comments. I'll say one of the main issues that the legislature has asked us to address is the alignment between state and local incentives and investments. And sometimes, I think, given our current tax structure, and this goes to the tax restructuring conversation as well, but how do we work to make sure that our local and our state incentives are aligned? And so ideas like this are things that everyone's looking at to see how we can support the project.
Thomas, this is the last comment on this.
Oh, please, go ahead. We need to have more discussion.
This is a great point, because the whole notion of a TRC, the way a TRC is structured, a transportation reinvestment zone, it's through an interlocal agreement. So the cities that are affected, like in a particular transportation corridor, the cities, the county, the school district can or cannot. It's up to them whether they decide to participate on their incremental revenues. The transportation agency that would be building the, you know, is it UDOT, is it UTA? And then also in this case, the state could participate, but there would be an agreement among all the parties. Here's the infrastructure investment that's needed in this area to serve the growing residential development or economic development, job creation that's happening. And all the parties get together and say, here are the revenues that we're going to contribute from our share of the incremental tax revenue coming in. And the transportation agencies say, maybe we're going to commit to actually build this project on a certain timeline. So there's certainty of funding, and then there's certainty of infrastructure investment, which then helps with job creation and residential development at the same time. I think it's a good idea. Can you tell?
Alan, can you stand and project real quick? Sorry. Thank you very much.
Currently, Cache County, we're asking them to do a road improvement. They have no funds, but if the couple of communities and the county came together in this partnership, all of a sudden we found a solution to a problem that's somewhat daunting otherwise. It has great merit.
Thanks for that contribution. Jeff, did you have something?
I do, and I think the question that Guy was trying to ask is a really good one, and that is, can this be used for infrastructure? And meaning that, I know that you guys live in the world of rails and roads, okay? And that's reality. But the coming reality and the disruptive technology that you and I talked a lot about is to say, what happens if we put a incredibly high-speed 5G wireless network that goes across the Wasatch Front from Tooele County to all the, it serves all these areas? What does that mean about where employers are going to want to locate themselves? Does that potentially solve the problem for a place like Tooele County? Instead of building 5 new lanes of freeway, how about if we built a really incredible broadband network or whatever it looks like out there to do that very same thing? So I hope that, and Andrew, I know you're in the middle of these discussions, to have that part of the discussion to say, we're just not buying asphalt and steel. Let's think about it in a much bigger way, because we all know the world is going to change and there are going to be all new, very disruptive things that are coming. And I think if we have the insight to build that into the legislation, this is the chance to do that.
Yeah, and I think Jeff is so right on that. We have the vertical infrastructure needs to be in place for some of these disruptive technologies that you could still make a case are directly tied to transportation. It's just a different type of transportation than what we've been used to.
I know exactly what you're talking about, but like an acronym, we didn't really go into that, but like, airways in the sky kind of thing. I know that Jetsons promised that like 40 years ago, but I'm still left driving on four wheels. But I mean, all of these things are very accurate. It's just, as I sit here as a policymaker, I know others are as well, it's gonna be interesting to see how more restricted funds, like impact fees, how that affect budgets, because when they're no longer available for the general fund, it will have some sort of impact. But this, I love that Tom brought it up, and one other that was in the room that sent me a text about, all of this is very germane to the current conversation. Every single one of us, every one of us around the table should be having with state legislators who are discussing tax reform. Because I can just tell you, I know several others do as well, the gas tax that we all pay doesn't even come close to maintaining current assets, let alone building anything new for the explosive growth we're experiencing. So whether it's
property taxes that don't automatically adjust for inflation, whether it's this gas tax scenario or these newly created restricted funds, all of these will have an impact that will matter to, no matter where you live, to someone who's making decisions on your behalf. I do want to respect the fact that we're still on this, and we've got another item under four before we move to five, before we have more of the same kind of robust discussion. So, Scott.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. And I think it's the nature of some of these items that they're just really interesting and engaging, and also larger than one quick presentation or discussion can have on them. So just the thought and the notion for you that these really, really relevant and important things are written into the sets as collaborative actions, that we captured that in our process to make sure that it's when we resolve those issues that we can report back to EDA if we're doing it, we're also doing it collaboratively. So let's just put through strategy two, just so you're aware, this one, there's an item on finance strategies such as TRZs, but also opportunity zones. There's a presentation that's gonna be given at the Wasatch Choice Day, so please come to that Utah Cities and Towns conference, if nothing else, just for that day. I think it's gonna be really engaging and interesting. And then
September 12th.
Thank you. September 12th.
Good time on that.
It's the whole day. It's the whole day program there. UNCT typically did Planner's Day, and so they've allowed us to work with them on the Wasatch Choice.
Hey, Scott, just a thought, because many people around this table are not local government officials and may not have seen info about the League of Cities and Towns conference on that particular day focusing on these topics. Gary, perhaps would you send out information about that Wasatch Choice Day to all of the members of the EDD? You can sign up just for that day if you want to as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Another long-standing item on the Wasatch for Economic Development Districts. Did you? Someone have a question? Okay. It's, go back one for me, Katie. It's exploration of a revolving loan fund. So right now, Davis County has a business development loan fund. Salt Lake County has some small business loan funds. Lennox Davenport, prior executive director of the EDD, had considered what we should do, or if we should consider a revolving loan fund for the other three counties, Morgan, Tooele, and Weber counties. And we've explored using community development block grant dollars as the seed money for an exploration in that, to just answer the questions organizationally. Should we do it? What are the risks? What would the structure of it look like? And so we have resolved with the Community Development Block Grant Rating Ranking Committee how to collect $20,000. It would be potentially available July 1, but to explore this. So that's a to-be-seen item, but it's one that's been on the collective minds of the EDD for about 2.5 years, and we're looking at how we move forward with that. So strategy three, our transportation land use connection program right now is our letters of intent timeframe. So if you are a member of a local government, you've seen a presentation from us, likely, and if you haven't, we're coming up to your council of governments, mayor's meetings. But September is time for letters of intent. These are projects to be funded by our planning dollars and also our transportation infrastructure dollars. And they help align land use transportation and help cities meet their needs with any number of planning issues, including market studies, economic analysis, and the real things on the ground that help projects come up out of the ground. And we've had some really successful TLC projects leading towards implementation.
Scott, I'm gonna put Mayor Dandoy from Roy City on the spot here. Mayor, can you just take a minute and explain to the folks here how this program, this TLC, Transportation Land Use Connection Program, has helped you in your own community move towards this transportation, housing, economic development connection, please?
Yeah, thank you. First thing is, and it'd be pretty hard for me, but let me be brief if I can. The challenge I think you have with any city, particularly a municipality that isn't as big as Salt Lake or Draper or one of those, is we just don't have the kind of resources. We don't have the deep pockets to allow us to be able to get a vision of where we want to go. And so we relied upon this organization to fundamentally help us to find a way to get a contractor that's got the skills and abilities to help shape the future. And today, we took advantage of it through what's called Focus Roy, to give us kind of a snippet, if you will, of what the future could look for us. And today, we've got a contract that's bedded down with us. It's going to give us an updated general plan. This plan is going to satisfy some of the needs in Roy to the Senate Bill 34. We're excited about that because it'll deal with affordable housing. But more importantly, I think what it's going to do is going to kind of give us a vision of what we think downtown business district is going to look like. And we're really excited about that, to infuse mixed development, to infuse some things that we hardly can spell, let alone understand. And the beauty of that is that for a small municipality, we just don't have the kind of resources to carry that vision. Working this plan as we got right now with this team is that they're helping us. And more importantly, we think between now and December 1st, we're going to have that vision presented to the City Council for approval. And that will launch us, we think, into the 21st century. Let me repeat that. Launch us into the 21st century, because as a small municipality, we don't have that opportunity very often. And so we look forward to it. And if I could get one caveat to this whole thing, if you are a part of a municipality or an organization that sometimes it's hard to live in an environment when you're dealing with big cities, because you're kind of the small person in the room, take advantage of this. This particular program is incredible to help us to be able to be competitive, and more importantly, to bring some vision to our constituents. We just didn't have that, but we got it today. And we're really looking forward to it. So Scott, to your point, bottom line would be is maybe after the first of the year, when we have solidified our future, then invite me to come back and let me share what we see the future of 38,000 residents who live in our city will see as we move forward based on this plan. And we're excited. Thanks for the opportunity of sharing that.
Wonderful, thank you. We have one more strategy. We talked a little bit about how transportation funding decisions are made, and then just an update for you all that EDCU has partnered with both Weber County and Davis County on a Northern Utah Economic Development collaboration or coordination. And we had a to-be-determined person on our committee that's now Chris Roybal, and he was unable to come today, but he will be engaged in this, and that's moving forward too. So we're beginning to check these items off the list. And out of just respect, we've got two more presentations. I'd love to try to move forward and capture a hub of opportunity and then chat a little bit about this project, and then bring it back to have additional roundtable if we have time.
Excellent, Christy. So we'll let you go ahead and give us our next agenda item presentation, the hub of opportunity. So this is Christy Chambers, and she's going to talk about the element as it ties into item number 4, inform stakeholders about economic development plans and strategies. So Christy, without further ado, we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you so much. Let me get my technology all in place. I'm going to fast forward here just a little bit, because this is a lot of information. And there you go. Very good. I'm Christy Chambers, and I'm the CEO with Columbus Community Center. And I want to ask, how many of you are familiar with our organization? Excellent. Okay. Let me tell you a little bit about us. We are a 50-year-old agency who was founded by parents who really wanted to make sure that their disabled loved ones had equal opportunity to reach their fullest potential. And we grew up along those lines. 50 years fast forward, we provide services in residential. We have 7 scattered sites throughout Salt Lake City where we serve over 70 people, everything from group homes, which require 24/7 care, to support living, where we touch down intermittently with folks and just make sure they have all of the tools necessary to live independently. We also are a large employer. We employ over 130 people with more significant disabilities in 5 lines of business, including a shred business. We have grounds and custodial. We have a large manufacturing warehouse where we package, kit, distribute, and provide order fulfillment, and a few other things along that line. But the 130 individuals are indeed our employees. We're able to provide them the dignity of a paycheck every other week, and so we're very thrilled that we can provide that meaning and purpose to those that we serve. We complement that with supported employment, where we put people out in the community to work. You're probably familiar with Harmon's or Einstein's. Those are just a couple of examples, but we provide the necessary supports so that they can be successful and the employer can be successful as well. The economy that we're in currently is quite fascinating. We essentially are at a very low unemployment rate, less than 3%, and what we're starting to find is that employers are coming us to tap into our undeveloped workforce, and that's been a real shift over the course of the last couple of years. And then we complement that with our day activity program. And essentially, we normalize people's lives. UTA is a huge partner of ours. They bring people to us 7:30 in the morning, and then They take them back to their residencies, 230. So PTA has been a huge partner with us over time, as well as the Housing Authority of County of Salt Lake, now known as Housing Connect, has equally been a partner of ours for about 30 years. So, a little background there, but it all leads to what we are currently engaged in. And I'm really proud to say we've been at this 4.5 years. We are on time, we are on budget, and we are 80% complete, so that's pretty exciting. What this is it's a 157-unit apartment building. 130 of those are affordable housing units. And of those 30, 30 are dedicated to our client base who will be able to live fully integrated in an apartment setting. So imagine that. 30 people with disabilities will be living side by side by their neighbors. But I think what is most interesting to you all is that we're on the Meadowbrook Track Station. And we were able to procure this land through UTA by virtue of the fact that they knew that our population specifically were most in need of public transit. So we approached UTA about 4.5 years ago, and we put forth this concept of a very unique apartment living, and they jumped on it. It didn't take them very long at all. So we are now in the overflow Olympic parking of that UTA parking lot. So just to kind of take you through a little bit of the economics of this. So we're a transit-oriented design on a major tracks and bus line, and it's fundamentally an affordable housing project. As I mentioned, 20% of the residents will be our clients, and it reflects really the general population. When you look at the general population, about 20% of us indeed claim a disability, and this will be the first of its kind with that disability in mind. The other interesting thing about this, and I'm going to back up just one more time, is we will be occupying this space for our Next Work Academy, which is specifically dedicated to those aging out of the school system who have autism. And we want to provide that independent living skill as well as employment skills through our Next Work Academy that will allow people to work in the community. One of the things we did is we engaged Sorenson Impact Center to do a study as far as what is the market to attract those with autism to the setting. We found that it's about 8,000 individuals within Utah could benefit from these services. And the ROI on benefiting from these services is indeed that if we are successful in launching people into independent living, and then also fully employed with benefits, we save the state about $2 million. And that's over the lifetime of supports that the government provides to individuals on the autism spectrum. So there is indeed an ROI on this as well. So how did we go about doing this? As I mentioned, we partnered with Housing Connect, which was formerly Housing Authority of the County of Salt Lake. And we pulled together quite, I call it the Frankenstein financing mix, because it really is a combination of low-income housing tax credits, both the 4% and the 9%, as well as new market tax credit. And then we fundraised an additional $6.5 million in order to make this all happen. And we could not do this without the support of the entirety of our community. We have everything from the state legislature, who has contributed $1.75 million to this, the county. We engaged county home funds, which was about $900,000, Olean Walker Fund, this is Rocky Mountain CRC. Our equity partner in this is Goldman Sachs, who was able to provide those tax credits. So it's been just a wonderful outreach for our organization, because we really have had to tap into pretty much everyone throughout the state. And so it's made us friends in many, many places, GoEd being one who sponsored this indeed. So see if I've covered everything. All right, so I mentioned stakeholders, Housing Authority, the county. Method Studio is our architect, R&O is our contractor. UTA, again, I mentioned we couldn't have done it without them with the land. So, I talked about the Next Work. 11 of these units are going to be dedicated to that independent living piece. So you'll have the bottom floor, which is a commercial space, then you'll have 11 units on top of that, kind of dormitory style. Those that are participating in this, we anticipate them to participate for 2 years, and again with the intention of really getting them into independent living as well as getting them a job. I'm going to talk a little bit about the transit-oriented design piece of this, because what's exciting, and when I talked to Scott a little bit about, we want to do what's called a community mapping, where essentially we map all of our community partners around that tracks line. And one of the things, which was quite nice, you may all be aware that SpyHop is building a building just right there on the tracks line. We equally are right there on the tracks line. But that would be a natural partner of ours. SpyHop being an organization, a nonprofit that provides skills for independent filmmaking to young high school students. Well, what we're finding as we talk to them that many of the people who participate in their program also are on the autism spectrum. So can we then connect those who are gaining benefits in our services with those that are gaining benefits in other services as well, and then everything in between, doctors, everything you would want, volunteer opportunities, employers, the ability to go downtown and engage with their peers in activities. So that's the importance of this transit-oriented design to our population. One of the things that we were able to convince, I'll say, South Salt Lake is that we didn't need as many parking spaces. And as we know, that can be really quite difficult to navigate through any city, but they were willing and able to do that just because most of the people that we will be serving will not have cars and they will rely very heavily on that transit-oriented design. These are some of the partners in our next work that we're going to be dealing with. We've been heavily partnered with the University of Utah and Ackerman Editions, who's going to study this. We are creating a little bit of a utopia out here with the mixed income, mixed use, mixed ability. If you look at that Meadowbrook track station, you'll see that there is just a lovely mixture of market rate as well as affordable housing. And I think it is kind of the example that we all want to see when you mix that mixed income together. So we're hoping to engage USU and the University of Utah to really study that too. The concept is indeed what they anticipated it will be. Some good pictures of what is concept design. Again, we engage Sorenson Impact. This is a graphic that we have put forth before the legislature to give them a real sense as to what the ROI is on this. And we're very proud to partner with Sorenson Impact. They have given us the data measurements and the evidence-based materials to really provide a compelling argument as we have promoted this. And I'll let you read this. I hope there's questions. This is quite a complicated project. Tyler has been through, so I'm happy about that. And any questions?
I think this is fantastic, and I think one of the challenges we have for people on the autistic spectrum is there are some that are absolutely just brilliant, but they are have severe social anxiety issues that prohibit them from getting in the workplace, and so I'm really hoping that this also will take care of that segment in that we're not having them in the workplace right now, but yet we should.
Right.
But it's connecting them with those unique opportunities with an employer that understands that they have a lot to offer, but they need to have specific accommodations given to them. But that's been a link, a missing link that we haven't had anybody that makes that connection. So they're in parents' basements. They're
exactly.
Just outside the workforce right now, but yet they have so much they can contribute.
Yeah.
That's that segment of the spectrum. But they need to have someone that is able to connect them and understand those social
Provide that bridge to opportunity, that's what we like to think. Because when children age out of the school system, all of their supports just end. We call it the service cliff. So we hope to kind of launch them into that next stage. And you're absolutely right. Those on the spectrum, it's really an invisible disability. So they look and act, somewhat normal, but just a little off. And employers sometimes don't understand, what that is. So part of what we're doing also is educating employers as to what it's
big part.
Yeah, like to be on the spectrum. And again, in a low unemployment, this is an incredibly gifted, untapped workforce. We know that there is propensity for detail and repetition, and there's certainly jobs in coding and the like, which are very well suited to this population with minor accommodations from the employer. So it's understanding what that would look like. Our Sorenson Impact, we did a pay for success grant, and they looked at that. They interviewed employers to see what are you willing to accommodate for, And it was a fascinating study. Cicero Group helped us with that, just downstairs. And we came up with kind of a list of those jobs that would be better suited for those on the spectrum, and those that maybe not so much so. So we're starting to narrow the field as to how we can match the employer need to the employee's ability.
I just think that's so important that there's people that might just be in a small repetitive job that's as good as they can get, but yet there is a significant segment that are brilliant that should be in a chemistry lab, that should be
absolutely
some high functioning processes,
yeah,
as long as they have those accommodations.
Exactly.
Being able to match them, so I'm really excited what you're doing.
Exactly, thank you. It's been a fascinating journey. There is a tidal wave, there's just a tsunami of these individuals who are aging out of the school system, primarily because the diagnosis is still relatively young. But we're seeing that there's just this incredible need. One of the challenges is that whereas our population we currently serve are federally funded, this population, adults on the autism spectrum, not so much so. So we've got some legislative work to do to see if we can't get some of those services.
Those of us that work in education, we can tell you that we can teach the skills that people need for jobs, but those social skills, those are the most difficult things for us to get. We don't have the capabilities to help with autistic children or younger adults to get them past the skill part into how to function and to get employers to understand that. So that's missing links that I've seen that you're providing. That's really important.
Yeah, and hopefully it's kind of a little bit of both. You educate the employer and then you educate the employee and then you find that match, which is good. Again, we're in a perfect economy to really experiment and see what that's going to look like.
Miriam?
I similarly think this is just fascinating. I have an older brother who, were he to live in Utah, would greatly benefit from something like this. You guys are doing amazing things. I guess a question would be, it seems like the need is much more than, you know, the physical space that you guys would have to accommodate those that would be able to live there. But if you have the training spaces, do you guys provide, or could you provide even like telework options for those that just need the training? Maybe they need the oversight, maybe they need some guidance and some regular check-ins, but then they could do it remotely, and then that overcomes some of the mobility challenges as well.
Yeah, the possibilities really are endless. We're going to have about 5,600 square feet in our next org academy, which is just, you know, a large educational space, and we hope to expand services not just for people who live there, but also, you know, one-off classes that we can help support that. And then again, matching the person with an employer is going to be a huge part of the emphasis there.
Excellent. And Yvette, Mark, don't mean to put you on the spot, but this sounds like a pretty good opportunity that you guys probably are a part of as a stakeholder or a partner of some sort for workforce development. No? Okay, I can clearly put you on the spot. All right. Well, anyway, I really appreciate this. I did not know about the entity, and to hear that it's been around for 50 years, I just think this, like Muriel said, is wonderful. And, you know, with our unemployment being where it is, it's both a blessing and a curse. And so I love how you just, you know, made this relevant to the group here today to show that this is an often untapped workforce that obviously has marketable skill.
Yes.
Notwithstanding that there might be some social challenges that Mr. Hacking brought up, but this is some means of, like, we all derive a lot of value out of what we do for a living. It's where we spend a lot of our time. Every demographic, that's important. So I just really appreciate the great work that y'all are doing. And Scott, for what it's worth, I really loved this like showcase. And I think that would be a wonderful part of future meetings as well. And I don't know if anybody else wants to chime in, but I thought this was useful to see some of the good work that we do. That oftentimes, you know, like the next agenda item, we'll encourage them to be part of the SEDS or make an application, but don't always get the back end story to see how something gets put into effect. So thank you to staff and Christy. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you. And we're opening spring of 2020, so I invite you all for a tour when we have our grand opening. So thank you.
Can I just briefly, I just want to emphasize one thing that Christy noted quickly, which was something that we've been talking about in this room, is the connection between where people live and where they work and how they get around, right? You made this important point about the location of your facility and the ability for folks in this community who disproportionately are not driving to be able to take transit And so if somebody's not living in a place that they have access to the transit system, then that in of itself is existing as a significant barrier for them to work and be engaged in the community. So this is just one great example of what we would call transit-oriented development, linking people with where they live and how they work and how they get around so that people can fully engage in the community. Thank you.
Perfect example of efficiencies to government and NGO services. So great job. Thank you. All right, well, that brings us to our next section of the agenda, and it's a SEDS project. I'm told that we have Arnold by the phone. Arnold, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent, good. That's just like Dr. Green. So this is an episode of Frasier. Thanks for joining us. I'm listening. So he's going to tell us about U.S. Oh, you're going to. Okay, very good, Niles. Go ahead. Awkward TV reference that only comes
to you.
Okay. You might want to rethink who's leading this meeting next time.
We will. We'll talk about this. Thank you so much. I was really impressed with the hub opportunity when I had an opportunity to go and tour it and see that this was the physical connection on the ground of transportation, the right land uses, affordable housing, access to opportunities, and to have a concrete economic benefit come out of it. I just thought that you all would benefit from hearing that. So thank you so much for the presentation. We'll hopefully find more of those in the future. Taking off our SEDS 5-year outlook hat and putting on the more current recent, you know, one of the core reasons that the EDD exists to be the conduit to create projects within the local region that we can bring EDA funding to. We've had a project actually approach federal EDA. So they reached out to a gentleman we work with in Denver, Trent, and Trent contacted me. And the process goes, an applicant applies through the EDD on a SEDS project form. That project is then put on the SEDS project list, and it's kind of a hit list of projects for the region that can then apply to federal EDA for funds. So after having a conversation with Arnold and Trent at EDA and talking through this, I just want to briefly mention it and give this a little different, but this is more of an FYI item at this time because it's a project that is still looking for some of those project details, but I did want to tell you about it and then preview it for you so that if it comes back in November or future EDA meeting, you have a little bit of background. So the project is US Ignite, looking at about $891,000. EDA investment grants are a maximum of a 50-50 grant. The other 50% can be cobbled together sources. It can be private, public, really anything other than federal. You can't match federal grant dollars with federal grant dollars. But what US Ignite wants to do is leverage new and existing smart city technology assets to develop high-skilled jobs, utilizing local high-growth startups and improved community services. So that means a lot of things, and you can read a little bit more information. I sent the project sheet around. But what they're really looking at doing is smart transportation, smart grid, smart health, and public safety applications that have been developed over the last 5 years that we would utilize investment specifically into communities. So they're targeting Salt Lake City specifically and also the opportunity zones, which provide a capital investment dollar deferment for local investment into those areas, but don't have a concrete project location yet. So that was why we want to bring this forward as an FYI, as EDA is really looking for having all of those project considerations thought through. So who are your partners? Who are the dedicated funding sources? What would the outcome be? And then should they receive EDA dollars, it's turnkey. They could begin working tomorrow. And I think that they have a really great idea. And it definitely aligns with our SEDS in the investment in transportation and other infrastructure, which includes broadband, 5G, any number of other kind of soft infrastructure, water, that sort of thing that isn't just roads and rails. And Arnold, if I missed anything, feel free to have you speak up for a minute about this, but just wanted to preview it for the committee and then ask if there were questions.
Yeah, hi. I think you've captured really well. The heart of it is we recognize the ability of transit technology to transform communities and be a source of workforce development, if not impacting the economy of entire regions. So We're looking to get funding from EDA for a project where we're going to work with City of Salt Lake, in particular region, particularly focusing on the opportunity areas, some low-income areas, just trying to get smart technologies implemented, deployed, at the same time working with local businesses in these areas, trying to upscale them on some of the skills that would be required to run smart technology. I know my colleague Glenn is also in the room. Glenn, do you have anything you'd like to add at this point?
One moment, Arnold. He's coming to the microphone.
No problem.
Green light. I've got a green light. All right. U.S. Ignite is a 501c nonprofit. We're investing some of our resources in this project because our objective is to help improve communities, and specifically to do so using advanced technologies, and especially advanced networking. And we have a smart gigabit community project. That project has all of Utah covered. Everyone sitting here at the table is covered under that smart gigabit community project. We've done a number of projects already through the University of Utah, through Utah Valley University, through Brigham Young University. And we want to make sure that these projects benefit all of the citizens' quality of life, amenities. And we recently realized that the EDA is very much in line with the kinds of objectives that we want to cover as well. In my meeting today here with you, I've listened to all of the speakers. I love every presentation so far. I think aligns very well with our objectives, and we look forward to coming back with a specific project, working with Scott and the team here on some of the things we think will be most beneficial. We do have a set of goals, which are this application of advanced technology to make great things happen, but we also want to work with local needs, so we want to make sure that that's happening. I refer to us-ignite.org. You can take an overview of the organization there, and to utahignite.com. UtahIgnite.com, all one word, no hyphen, is the local branch or the Utah branch for Utah Ignite. Utah is one of two states that have come into the program as an entire state. The other one is North Carolina. They have a statewide network like UETN, which is a fiber optic network throughout the entire state. And so those are the two states that have come in statewide. We've got 26 others across the country, and we've been able to work economic development programs with several of them. We look forward to working with Utah.
Excellent, Glenn. Arnold, thank you both very much. So again, this is an informational item. It'll be back before us at our next meeting.
And I just had just so to for the benefit of the new members and members who have come since we've had a project application. So our mission specifically as the EDD is to support economic development plans, promote long-term economic competitiveness, and attract federal monies in order to implement local plans. And we do that through being, again, the conduit for EDD funding in three specific ways. So one is the Public Works Economic Adjustment Assistance Funds. These are up to $3 million. And you think of these as infrastructure projects that relate to dollars in equal jobs out. We were successful in helping Ogden City open up a section of business development Ogden area, BDO area, with a $2 million infrastructure grant in a water mine. Or the second is regional innovation strategies up to $500,000 for entrepreneurial centers or cluster-based startups, and local technical assistance up to $300,000, which would be that kind of like soft planning. And that's the only one that is not related to dollars in equal jobs out. That would be more like market analysis, centers-based market studies, what would the market there in this area for housing versus jobs. But we're looking specifically for projects that relate to these three funding areas that can come from local governments or private business partnered with a local government to make projects like this happen. So they are rolling block grants. They're not tied to a single application time frame, and EDA effectively has money until it runs out. So it's nationally competitive. And then they let us know at the local level of the EDD directors know when funds are either have been bolstered by additional dollars or new funding opportunities are available or if those monies have run out. So as you're out there in the communities thinking about projects, and part of the reason we engage such a broad private sector group here is to help us think through at a local level what these projects would look like to bring new jobs into the economy. And we want to partner with you. That's one of the core functions of this group. And now that the SED is completed over the next year, project cultivation is one of my primary focuses to help bring value to the region through lending EDA funds.
Excellent. Thank you. Yes, Jeff.
Can I just make a brief comment? And that is that we received, through the UAMI received a grant through the EDA, through Trent Thompson and the Denver office. We just completed that work in the last 30 days. And so we've got our final report. It's going to be approved. And that is, we'll get that back to you just so the SEDS can see what was completed with that. It's a small grant, but it made all the difference in the world to us. So it's great. And I appreciate you guys cultivating your relationship, with, especially with the EDA Denver office, because that hasn't always been the case. And I'm glad to see you guys have done that. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for the feedback, Jeff. And we look forward to hearing how the grant gets utilized in the future meetings. I've been a bit remiss. We had another member walk in. So, Mike, you want to introduce yourself just real quick for the benefit of those who may not know you?
Yes. Thank you. Mike Deaver.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
And managing partner of State Street Partners here in Salt Lake City. We're a public engagement firm, including one of our clients, the greatest county commissioner in the state. I was told to say that.
County commissioner? Wow, that's a little inflated. Greatest county commissioner. How about the greatest county?
And the greatest county. I was going to get to that point. Tooele County. So specifically tourism, marketing, branding, coming up September 21st night, like September 28th, Luna Rare Show. And a few other familiar faces here. We also work with UCARE. So when we talk about growth and expansion and everything else, UCARE and Tooele are both very big pieces of this. So glad to be here. Thank you.
I appreciate that sales pitch. Thank you very much, both. Karen.
So Karen Lang, West Valley City.
No sales pitch about upcoming events? Okay.
They're all good.
Well played. All right. So again, we've progressed down to item number six, but I am respectful of everybody's time. I know everyone has carved out some time to be here today. We kind of unofficially took care of six while we were doing four and A and B. I'm going to kind of poll the group here. Do you mind if we were to officially progress through like other business, maybe formally adjourn? For those that want to discuss this, maybe continue afterwards after the meeting's formally adjourned so that those who need to get on to other things can do so and not feel awkward, and the rest of us can sit around and chat about the SEDS and how this might play into the overall objective of this very group. I'm not hearing anybody say
no, but I'm seeing lights some of jazz to accompany that conversation.
Oh, we should have a little wine mixer out there. It might be able to persuade some of you to stick around. All right, so with that then, Scott, how about we go over other business, if you don't mind, please.
Other business, last meeting of the year will be November 18th, 2019. We meet quarterly, so watch for the schedule for next year to be around December or so that we release that. And then we're entering conference season, so look at the upcoming agenda items that we have and really engage in that. We've had a lot of conversations about land use, transportation, economic development, and the coordination between the three. And then if you have any funding interest that you're interested in making an application for any of our funding programs, EDA or otherwise, reach out to any of the WFRC staff and we'll help you navigate that process.
Excellent. Otherwise, those dates are there for all of us to read and review. So the chair would entertain one final motion. I'm remiss. Is there anything else that anyone would like to bring up under other business?
Just to make sure I understand, so we can leave the mics on and anybody can stay. If there's stuff you have going on that you want to share with the group or talk about, you're saying that people should feel free to stay, but if they need to leave, then they can.
Right? Yeah, and okay. I know that the wine mixer will start like maybe 5 or 10 minutes after that. So, all right. Seeing no one else having anything other under other business, the chair would entertain one final motion. There's a move by Mike Newton to adjourn.
Second.
There's a second by Muriel. And before there's any further discussion, I just want to give huge kudos to Mark. He's the only one here sporting anything U of U related for the big game this Thursday. So good job, dude. And I appreciate you wearing some gear from the winning team. And with that, I have a few all those in favor to adjourn. Excellent. Thank you all very much for being here. Let's take a short break, and for all those who want to remain, we'll start about 5 minutes.